from Louisville Public Media.
Welcome to The Next Louisville. This year, WFPL is highlighting youth voices, telling the stories of kids, teenagers, and young adults in our community. Some of that is through long and short-form stories about these youths and their interests, achievements, and challenges. You'll also hear more first-person stories about and by young people in Louisville. As part of this project, we've planned a different kind of platform to let youth talk about issues that matter to them. Every other month, we'll air a youth talk show, all focusing on different topics, in partnership with We Day Kentucky. This is the first one of these shows, and over the next 30 minutes, you'll hear four youth from our community talk about race and identity.
Hi, my name is Nia Douglas.
Nia is a junior at the Brown School.
My name is Jalen.
Jalen Dykes is in sixth grade at W.E.B. Du Bois Academy.
My name is Ashanti.
And Ashanti Scott is a senior at Butler Traditional High School. The discussion was led by a student, too.
I'm Alexis Kamick.
Alexis is a senior at Presentation Academy. She came up with all the questions, so I'll turn it over to her.
So first question, when people show that like black people are just suspected drug dealers and not actual people when they're being murdered, do you think that stereotypes, like the media shows many stereotypes, how do you think that makes other people treat us?
I think that the media really puts black people into this box. And we see with a lot of movies and TV shows, we see kind of the same type of black people. We see the black people that, you know, they fit this stereotype and this strong generalization, but I'm like, there's so many different types of black people, and because of that, when we see a person of color, we only expect them to speak this certain way or dress this certain way. Like, there are black people who speak Spanish, there are black people who like to play the violin or like to do poetry, there's black people who, you know, don't like to wear Jordans, and so those stereotypes really make people assume that this is all, you know, black people are, you know, they, and then they lead to questions like, do you like fried chicken or do you like Kool-Aid? Because that's what they see on a TV show. And it's like, not every black person fits that stereotype.
Exactly. And actually, now that you bring that up, our counselor at the beginning of the year, he showed us a video about, I do not remember exactly the video, but I do remember the main details about how back in the day, they used to have white people that put a powder on their face called blackface that would just try to make them look black. And then they would have a watermelon eating contest. And that just reminds me about how many times black people have been deceived thinking, oh, eventually we're going to get to the other side. And then what happens is they just get lied to.
So kind of to go off what you were saying with blackface, a lot of people now, not a lot, but people that I've been seeing blackfishing, it's been happening a lot more where a lot of white people are tanning themselves really, really dark or just like getting darker makeup to make themselves look black. So how do you think that makes us feel? Like, how does that make you all feel?
It makes me feel like kind of disrespected. It's like they want your skin color and the clout that comes with it, but like just for a couple hours, for a couple Instagram posts, and then they get to wipe it off. And like, I don't get to wipe off all this like oppression and hardship that I have to deal with for the rest of my life.
Exactly.
And can I ask a question to you, black women? How does it feel to like have to go through like what you have to go through? Like, we know that we're already uneven, but like, how does it feel like as a black woman's perspective to like have to work two times as hard to work as your counterpart? Like, even though you do the better job, they're still thinking like, oh, this other lady over here, she's, you know, white, so maybe we should go with her. So how does it make you guys feel, like, just in general?
I would say for me, it's kind of like it hurts, but at the same time, it like fuels me too. Like, it's like, okay, you don't think I'm going to do it, so I'm going to do it just to prove you wrong, you know?
Do it, and also, do it three times better.
Exactly. And also, like, when people see my hair and they're like, oh my gosh, your curls, like, how did you do that? Da, da, da. And I'm like, water and shea moisture, you know? So I'm just like, it's certain things kind of to go back with Nia was saying, like, they want to be us, but they don't want the things that we've been through and like the things that we still go through. So it kind of, it sucks.
Just as a black woman, it's hard having to work so much harder and also not being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked with a lot of women of color when it comes to politics, and I look up to a lot of women of color when it comes to politics, but, you know, women of color are constantly put off. They're constantly demeaned politically. Representative Maxine Waters, you know, there's so many people on media who attack her and her position. And, you know, she's now the first woman chairman of the House Financial Committee. And so it just goes to show that no matter how hard we work, you know, we're still constantly looked at as lesser than or as uneducated or maybe as not as educated.
Or unequal to.
Yes. And then to move back to the blackfishing point, it's just, it's really upsetting that there are people who kind of, like Nia said, they are able to put on, you know, makeup or darken their skin tone, and then they're just able to take that off. And they don't have to go through the struggles of what black skin, what comes with having black skin. They don't have to, you know, wear that on a daily. They don't have to worry about all the things we have to worry about, whether it's relationships with the police or going into a store and, you know, people wondering, are you going to steal something or anything like that. So it's just really upsetting that they can, you know, make our skin tone that we've fought so much with and struggled so much with, and they can just make it kind of a cosmetic trend, which it's not. Our skin is not a trend.
Mm-hmm. And Ashanti, like how you were saying, how there was like, you can, it's like a put on and put off thing. So it's like, they want to look like us, but they don't want to be us, basically. They don't know, they want to look like us, but they don't want to have the trouble and the pain to actually be us.
Yes. There's this one woman, Rachel Dolezal. I know a lot of people know about her. And that's really upsetting to me. Someone who, you know, takes black hair, something that, you know, black women have struggled with and black males have struggled with. You know, we're constantly ridiculed about our hair, you know, told to straighten our hair and things like that. And they take that and they make it trendy, or like the Kardashians with boxer braids when we've been wearing our hair in cornrows for forever. That's like a cultural thing. You know, slaves use braids to map out their escape routes. There's history behind our culture. There's history behind what we wear. And to disrespect it for a trend or to get viral or to think you're cute is just not okay.
Ashanti, since your mom's in elected office, do you think that the racial representation in the government is a lot, or how do you think it makes you feel?
I think when my mom got elected to the Kentucky State Legislature as the first black woman in 20 years, 2 years ago, it really showed the racial disparities that we have, the barriers that we still have, that we only have one black woman in the entire 138-member strong Kentucky State Legislature. And that shows me that, you know, we need to make a change and make sure we're being inclusive and getting people of color into those elected spaces.
Nia, do you have an opinion?
Well, just to go off what Ashanti was saying, I have seen her mom, Attica Scott. She's came to my school and spoke, and I've seen her at a lot of different events. And it just shows a lot of great representation for all the young black girls out there who are thinking about venturing in that type of job sector.
Also, I've seen Ms. Scott, or Attica Scott, come to my school a lot, and I want to be a lawyer, and I want to, like, hopefully run for office. So it just is reassuring to see someone in that position who looks like me. So it's just, like, nice to know, you know?
I would just say that it's kind of like, the word I would use is kind of like a placebo. It's kind of like if you put people in a box, that's all they feel they can be. Like, if the people told you that, like, apple juice made you sleepy, and then you drink this apple juice and suddenly, like, you fall asleep, it's just like a placebo. And if all you see in the media is just black people and black women specifically portrayed as, like, negative, however you depict negative, but negative roles, and you kind of think that's all you ever amount to be. But if you see people like Representative Scott, then it gives you like a boost of confidence, like we could be up there too.
Exactly.
For me, I love politics, so I love like from state to local to even United States Congress. But I love seeing the increased level of representation we're having on all levels, and I know for Kentucky especially, seeing for example, the House Democratic Caucus just elected the first African-American ever into a leadership role, caucus chair. His name is Representative Derrick Graham. So being able to see that we as black people, especially we as black women, we can aspire to have leadership roles. So we can aspire to not only be elected into a position or an office or appointed to a position, but we can lead the entire party, and we can really be those leaders. We can be that voice.
Yes.
Wasn't the like last election, the midterm, like the previous, it was the midterm election?
Yes.
Seeing all those women of color, yeah, just not yeah. just black people, but women of color be elected in those midterm elections was just amazing. It was just like, okay, like we can be this, we can be these people, we can be these women. Like it was just so cool mm-hmm. to me.
And on a political standpoint, I think what needs to happen is we probably need to start encouraging more people to vote. Because right now people, they know they can vote, but they're still scared to vote. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're just afraid that someone's going to be rude to them. Or like in one picture, I think it's a book called The Washingtons Go to Birmingham, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were trying to go through the, when their parents or someone was trying to go through the voting door, there was this man being disrespectful, so like he knew that he can't stop them from voting, so what he did was try to make them go away so that the person that they wanted could win, or that he would try to persuade people. And I think that just has to go to show that you can't be scared to vote. Like you have to voice your opinion, because one vote could literally be the difference between a country together and a country falling apart.
So do you see colorism in the way of people valuing lighter-toned black people over darker-toned black people? And if so, how?
Well, yeah, I would definitely say yes to that question, because the way they see it is like the lighter you are, the closer to white you are. So like, well, it used to be not so much now, but like light-skinned boys were preferred over dark-skinned boys. But, you know, there's a new wave now and dark skin is in for boys. For girls, not so much. They still prefer lighter or like mixed girls.
That's tough.
I think that colorism is definitely favoring lighter skin tones over dark skin tones. We see it so much on social media. We see it so many with jokes. You know, people joke about people, dark skin people, and they, you know, make comments like, you're pretty for a dark skin girl. We hear that all the time. And it's just, it's definitely a problem. And people definitely favor lighter skin tones over darker skin tones.
And kind of to go off of that, like, since you all are both girls, how do you feel like, when seeing all those people say that, like, they would like a light-skinned girl over a dark-skinned girl, or even a white girl over a black girl, how does that render your identity and, like, hurt you?
Well, it used to make me sad, like, you know, way back when, but now I just, like, immediately angry. Like, I'm just like, okay, obviously, like, we're just not meant to, like, okay, we're done here.
Right.
Period.
For me, it's disappointing. I think that we need to make sure that we're empowering all women and that we're putting value on all women of color, whether dark skin or light skin. And it's really appalling to me when I hear that and when I see things like that. And it makes me want to do some work and educate people on why, you know, colorism is an issue and why, you know, every skin tone is beautiful.
Exactly. I agree. Especially with, like, again, being in private school, it's like, I'm constantly around white people and I'm really the only black girl. So it's just like, how do you all see me? You know, like if some people see me that way, if my own people can sometimes see me that way, how do you see me? So it's really like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. You know,
we have a kid in our school. He's actually one of the white kids, I guess, Caucasian kids, the only Caucasian kid in the AP program in our school. So, I mean, we don't actually think of him as an actual Caucasian because we don't look at the skin tone. But what we do think of him as is a brother.
I kind of see it too. Like, I've been in private school for middle and high school. So it's like all of my white friends, it's never really been a distinction between like my white friends and my black friends or like who we are. We've all just kind of grown to be a family, especially like it's the 21st century. It's diversity, you know, like even though people have to be educated, it's getting better in private schools, I think. So, watching movies like The Hate U Give and Black Panther, do you think that has opened people's eyes to seeing the accomplishments of black people? And how have those movies made you feel?
Oh, The Hate U Give. I think it was a wonderful movie, except for the sad and disappointing parts.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that watching Black Panther, it really kind of reminded me of like, just, it made me look deeper at our history, and I did that a lot with my friends, and really, Wakanda just kind of reminded us of, like, just the entire continent of Africa, and how it was, like, this area that was secluded, And, you know, the world thought it was like just this third world nation that was terrible. And little did you know, they had all this technology. And people kind of think of that, you know, when they think of Africa, they first of all generalize it into a whole like continent. But they think that it's like so poor and it's so all these stereotypes. And it's so rich in resources. And when you look at history, there's so many awesome things that come out of the continent, awesome people, and there's so much culture and rich, it's so rich in resources. And I think Black Panther really allowed that conversation to happen with me and some of my friends. And then with The Hate U Give, I think there was, I have a lot of white friends in my school, and I think, you know, some of them had kind of like a stigma, especially towards like police brutality and the Black Lives Matter movement. They didn't really see it. They didn't really see the impact it had on Black communities. They didn't really understand, you know, that Black people were being shot, you know, for no reason. They thought, you know, they're all criminals. The ones, you know, the police don't make mistakes. And so I think The Hate U Give really gave a deep understanding and a deep kind of microscopic view of police brutality, you know, kind of the Black Lives Matter, hands up, don't shoot movement.
I think when I watched The Hate U Give, it was easily one of my favorite movies. And I read the book, which was really surprised me because I go to Prez, and this was the first year that it was in our reading requirements. Like, we have a summer reading requirement, and that book was in one of them. And I was like, well, this will be interesting to see how many people read it and, like, what they have to say about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people read it, and a lot of people were really excited when the movie came out, and they were just as angry as I was and just as angry to, you know, that these things were happening and wanted to change. So I was really excited, and I agree with Ashanti. It definitely gets the conversation going about the issues that we're going through.
I was just going to say, like, for Black Panther, I think it was a really good, like, learning opportunity for white people, especially because Marvel is already popular for white people anyways. But one thing I was saying, like, with my, I was going to say colleagues, I don't have a job with my, I do have peers. A job, but still, yes, with my peers, I was saying, like, why, the only thing that I didn't like so much was, why did the villain have to be Black? Like, after all this, the white people, they were going to learn so much, and then at the end, are you serious? But I think it was really good, like, because it showed that Black people, like, it's not just what meets the eye, like, the stereotype that you place on them, because Wakanda was actually thriving without the white man. But anyways.
And actually, there was a movie that just came out called Spider-Man Into the Spideyverse. The only reason that this movie ties into something is because if you've seen the movie, it shows that how he had to be resilient. He had to show resilience because his uncle was actually one of the villains.
Is that the new Spider-Man movie with the Black boy?
Yes.
My little brother loves that. It's so cute. It's a little cartoon.
Yeah,
he loves it.
And there's that song by Post Malone called Sunflower that's in the movie too. That just goes along with the, it really goes along with the movie.
That kind of ties in, like, how do you think that music, a lot of new artists and even old artists are bringing in music that is triggering activism and making youth be like, okay, this is something we need to talk about. So how do you think that youth are responding to that music?
Meek Mill's new album.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that album was so good. It hit on mass incarceration. It hit on issues within our justice system. It hit on, you know, issues that we face with race, like how he talks about how a Black woman was a judge that, you know, locked him up for, you know, a petty crime for a really long time. And, you know, how when we see our people like that, you know, we want to kind of, you know, hate our people, but, you know, he didn't do that. And I think that his album is just one prime example of how music has really opened these doors and opened up these conversations.
I don't really know if the youth like it too much, like the political kind of music. I don't know. I think it's like it's the truth that they don't want to hear. And, like, right. Yeah. I don't know. But I will say Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly album, I just listen to it. Sorry, I just listened to it this summer, and it opened my eyes. It was so good. If you haven't heard, All Right, which I know y'all have, but, like, you know, listen to it. Thanks.
Also, the song, what is it? Who's it by? It's by Childish Gambino.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, This Is America.
This Is America. That was a really big one a few months ago. Yeah. Everyone was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it definitely gets the conversation going, too. I agree. Music's a big part of our society today.
And also, what you were saying about starting the conversation, in 2018, you know, Jordan Lucas's I'm Not Racist was really big. And a lot of people, like, I think it did too, like, kind of missed the mark, but at least it got the conversation going.
Exactly. So all of us go to school. So when we're being taught Black history, do you think that it's woven into the curriculum or it's just a 1 month plan that they teach only in the month of February?
Well, I would say it's not even the 1 month. Like at our school, I go to Brown, and at our school, AP European history is mandatory and African American history is not even elective. And so it's European history. So, of course, not going to learn about Black people. So we don't really get taught anything, especially this year.
Exactly. Nishan?
I would say that our school, it's very problematic how they teach Black history. It's mainly the same thing. It's reoccurring. It's, you know, Rosa Parks, Dr. King, who were awesome. They were great civil rights leaders. But, you know, Black history is deeper than that. And we have to make sure that when we're teaching these curriculums that we're really delving into Black history in the same manner we do with other European history, like you said, and things like that.
Actually, my school, we have so much Black history. Actually, this year we have started coming through and actually electing black historians that we think that indented the world, such as Malcolm X, John Lewis, Rosa Parks, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, the Big Six. So if our school is pretty much, we're into all cultures, but we're mainly deeply into Black history.
How do you think that like makes you feel? Like, do you feel more empowered with learning more Black history?
Most definitely. Like, people like John Lewis, I had no idea until I actually went to W.E.B. Du Bois Academy. Heck, I didn't even know about W.E.B. Du Bois Academy until I went to W.E.B. Du Bois Academy. So I really do feel like it's opened up a giant section in Black history.
So since it's Black History Month, who is your favorite activist and why?
Can we do a boy and a girl?
Sure.
So I actually have a few girls actually in mind. One of the women that I think is probably going to be Malala. If you don't know her story about how she was fighting, trying to get education, and as she was trying to fight for this, she was shot in the face. And she had to go to a hospital where she was still going to college. Another one is probably Maya Angelou because I think she has a lot of powerful, powerful poems that I think that stand out extremely well. And my favorite male activist is probably Malcolm X because I've watched a lot of documentaries on him and I've just learned a lot about him and I'm getting to enjoy it.
I can't think of like a specific person at the moment, but I would say the Black Panther Party as a whole, just because like Martin Luther King, he was very prevalent about nonviolence and turn the other cheek, which is crucial and important and beneficial and everything. But the Black Panthers were like about defending yourself and, you know, standing up for yourselves. And I just feel like I more personally gravitate more towards, it's not really rebellious, but more that route.
Mm-hmm. I would say my favorite activist is probably Thurgood Marshall. He's a graduate of Howard University, which is my dream school. I hope to attend there in the fall. He was also a great lawyer. He fought for Brown versus Board of Education, which desegregated public schools. And, you know, without him, me and a lot of other kids in the public school system wouldn't be able to sit at the desk we do every day. And we wouldn't be able to have the access to, you know, the what we need. You know, we wouldn't have access to equal opportunities. And I would say that his influence has had a lasting impact. And, you know, he was appointed to the Supreme Court of the United States, and he continued to fight for and stand up for civil rights and African-American rights. And that's why I think he's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with Jalen. I really love Maya Angelou. I really like poetry and I like write poetry. So just to see her doing it and like reading her poetry, I'm like, okay, like I want that, you know, like I want my experiences to be on paper like that and it to start that conversation for people to see that this stuff is real. This is emotions, it's raw, and it hurts.
I would just say another one would be Muhammad Ali, and it just like came to me just now, but he actually was more rebellious, like him not going to fight in the war because he said he's not going to like kill innocent people, and for what, you know, for a country who still spits on his name and everything. And like him saying he's Black and he's pretty, it was very defiant in the world who wants to whitewash everything and make like white people the standard.
What can we do now as youth to continue and enhance the growth for equality for all races?
I think it's important that as youth that we make sure we're watching, like, you know, elections if you're of age. And even if you're not of age, because you can still contact elected officials. I try to reiterate that so much to people who aren't 18. You can still send in a letter. I know for me personally, there were some girls from Mercy Academy that were, like, bills, wrote letters to legislators in Frankfurt advocating for them to support the no pink tax bill. So just making sure that, you know, we're watching what's going on when it comes to laws and legislation, because that impacts us the most. And, like, I know in Kentucky, you know, for people of color, we're one of two states that don't restore voting rights. And so we can help Black people get to the polls and be able to use their voice if we're putting the pressure on our legislators and on our representatives to vote that type of way.
And I also think that what we're doing right now is also a very, like, it's a good start. We're all youth. We're peers. Like, you know what I mean? We're not children, but we're youth.
I'm so, a child.
And we're, like, having this conversation for people to hear, for people to listen. Like, it's a start. If people can just have that conversation, like Nia said, we'll get somewhere. Mm-hmm. Praying.
And I want to add, I just love seeing how much young people are really, we're mm-hmm. really grabbing that torch. We're really creating our own spaces and we're dominating conversations. And I think, in my opinion, other than probably second to the civil rights movement, this is the most youth activism we've seen. We've yeah. seen, like, March for Our Lives, the Sunrise Movement, Students Demand Action, so many things, and even outside of politics, and that young people are really leading and we're really using our voice. And I'm really excited about that.
Also, earlier when Alexis touched on the midterms and all the women in color who were coming in to fill the office spots, I think it's really important to acknowledge the intersectionality of their identities and that of all of our identities. Like, it's not just, I'm not just Black and I'm not just a woman. I am a Black woman. So to see all the women of color really gives all the other Black girls and women of color some more confidence.
Exactly. Thank you all.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks. Wonderful opportunity.
That's a wrap. It's a good day to be Black.
You've been listening to special programming on 89.3 WFPL. This production was part of The Next Louisville, a project supported by the Community Foundation of Louisville. This youth talk show, the first of several we have planned, was produced in partnership with We Day Kentucky. Thanks to the youth who participated, Alexis Kamick, Ashanti Scott, Nia Douglas, and Jalen Dykes. For more about this project, visit nextlouisville.wfpl.org. Thanks for listening.